Welcome to the 15th episode of La Storia Podcast. I'm your host, Santina Giannino. Today we will hear the story of my friend, Randy Varagris, actress, producer, realtor, and recent founder of Renovation Resources. Can't wait to hear about her entrepreneurial journey. Hi, Randy.
Hi, Santina.
How you doing?
I'm great.
I'm so glad that you can make it here today. I can't wait to hear your story. You have such a great background. Mainly you're an entrepreneur, which is what I'm really, really interested in, people, what they're doing.
Yep.
I know you reinvented yourself probably a dozen times.
I'm really good at reinventing.
Yeah, you just did it in the last couple of months again.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah. I always succeed in trying. That's where I'm very successful.
And that's a great thing, because a lot of people just too afraid to try.
Yeah.
You know, it's better to try and fail than not to try anything, right?
Be
comfortable. I'm comfortable doing nothing.
Right.
My life.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so uncomfortable doing nothing.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
As a matter of fact, if you go to my Facebook page, right under my profile, it says, "I'd rather try and fail than fail to try."
If you have tried to do something and failed, you're vastly better off than if you try to do nothing and succeed it.
There you can see?
Same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's always in front of me.
That's so
cool. I don't
cool.
even need a reminder to tell you the truth, because I think it's just embedded in my head, and, you know, it's just, I'm not afraid to try new things anymore.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I don't really care if I fail, and I don't really care what other people think, so, right? Mm-hmm.
Then it works.
It works for me.
And oh, so, my goodness. I'm looking at your board now, and I actually see a picture of us together. We're up there playing
oh my
golf.
God.
How funny is that?
That is true.
Yeah.
That's how we met.
Yeah, exactly. That was the first day we met.
Well, that's Sharon.
Yeah.
Who, you know, she's always, well, there's another card over there. You're not on that one, but on every occasion, she will take pictures from Facebook, and then she just sends me cards.
Yeah, talk about an entrepreneur. She's great.
She's unbelievable. And that says, "Happy birthday, Santina," and I just put it up there. That was the very first time I met you.
Yeah, and that was a very hot day, and we saw, I think we saw like a very sick fox or
a
wolf.
I think it was a fox or a coyote.
Oh,
a coyote.
Yeah.
And we walked around for like three or four holes with that a golf clubs in the hand, because we thought we were going to get attacked. Remember, they kept on coming out of the woods and just staring
at us? Yeah, it was like rabid.
Yeah.
That was wild.
You know, that was punk-a-pong that we played.
Okay.
And it's very woodsy and very, yeah.
It was huge.
It was huge, too. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
There you are. On my wall.
Yeah, exactly. I feel famous now.
I thought you were looking at all the pictures of Isabella.
Oh, yeah. Your daughter
She's
is gorgeous.
Anyway. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, so let's start with, tell us a little bit about your background, how you grew up, where you grew up, how did you end up in Hull, this beautiful place that you live in.
Oh, my gosh. I love, love, love Hull. I'm a big fan of Hull. If you don't know where Hull is and you're listening to this, Hull is a 7-mile peninsula about 5 miles southeast of Boston. And at its widest point, I don't even think it's a mile. And so, like, most of the time there are about 10,000 people there. And then in the summer it just triples.
Right.
And there's everything there from Section 8, which is, you know, poverty, to there might even be a billionaire in Hull.
Right.
I mean, and we all get along. It's a motley crew. Salty, salty, salt of the earth people. I love that everybody there is very helpful. You know, it's a great close town. That can be good and bad. It's good if you need something, because everybody will come out of the woodwork and help you. And if you're trying to keep a secret, it's bad, because everybody knows. There's one grocery store. You go to the grocery store on the day you look your worst. That's when you run into everybody.
Yeah.
And that's when you get the scoop, you know, the scuttlebutt on who's seeing who and all, you know. Oh,
right.
it's comical, but it's fun. I love living in Hull. How did I get there? That's a good question. we used to spend our summer vacations there when I was a kid, and I just thought, this is heaven. And it's funny, I was
on vacation from where? Where did you
from
live?
Texas.
That's a long way.
It is. Oh my gosh. Our drives to Hull were hilarious because we never had the money to fly. My parents were just 20 years old when I was born, so they were in school.
Yeah.
So they were going to school at Illinois Institute of Technology and Texas A&M. So we lived in Chicago and we lived down in Texas when we were coming back to Hull, you know, for summer holidays. And I just remember my parents always saying, "We're going home, we're going home." And I thought, that's kind of interesting. I would tell people, like, I don't live at home. My home is in Hull. We just live in a house, like, because my
Texas.
Parents, yeah, in Texas, my home is Hull, because when it was time to go to Hull, I would hear my parents saying, "We're going home." Yeah, and so it's funny growing up thinking I didn't grow up in a home, but, you know, that was just semantics. Of course, I felt like we had a home, but that word, to me, means Hull. And so, eventually, I was living in California, thinking I was going to be a movie star because who
let's
wouldn't?
Talk about that because you are an actress.
I am an actress, yeah,
and a producer.
Yes. And so it was
so
funny.
How old were you when you moved to Hollywood?
Oh well,
to make it really, really, really big,
right? I thought I was moving to Hollywood. I was moving to Huntington Beach, which when you live in Texas and you're looking at a map, and this is before the internet and Google, you know. On the map, I thought, oh yeah, Huntington Beach is right beside Hollywood.
Yeah.
In reality, to get to an audition, it would take me like 3 hours in bumper-to-bumper traffic, regardless of the time of my audition. And so even though it was probably less than 30 miles away, like on a map, I thought they were neighbors. They're not. And that was a long time ago. I was 18. When I moved to Huntington Beach.
By yourself?
Yeah. Yep.
Wow.
I just thought, I had gone to the University of Texas in Austin because my parents said, if you go to college, we'll pay for it. And if you quit, you're on your own. So I thought, okay, well, I'm not stupid. I'll take advantage of this opportunity for free education. And what I ended up doing there at the University of Texas was just student films. That's what I was like, what? You can audition for student films here? And, you know, ding, ding, ding. It was like, I had no idea. This light bulb went off and I got everything I auditioned for. And I thought, this is easy. I'm good at it and it's fun. And what a dopamine rush, you know.
Yeah.
This is what I want to do for a living. And so I quit school. Knowing that I was never going to get a free education again.
Right.
By the way, I'm still making payments to my student loans because I ended up finishing college, but years later. that's a long story in itself. But so I was 18 when I moved out to what I thought would be LA, but you know, Huntington Beach was, I thought, close enough, and it wasn't. And reality slapped me in the face. You know, every time I went to an audition, I would walk in and I looked exactly like 12 other very talented girls in the room.
Just another blonde, green eyes. I said green.
Yeah, right? Yeah, hazel, yeah. We all had the same look. It was really comical and scary. I was like, oh my God, you look just like me. You know, when you walk in, like seeing a bunch of robots. It was funny. And then...
Because that's what they're looking for.
Exactly. Right. I had the look they wanted and I'd get called in. Everybody in LA has an agent. So I had an agent.
Yeah.
And the agent, you know, gets you work. It's a little different than Boston here. And you could get like good work, but I never had those opportunities. I was a tiny, tiny, tiny fish in a sea of actors. So when my parents called me up and said they were moving from Denton, Texas, up to Northern California, or Middle California, not Northern, I said, "Ooh, can I live with you again?" And they were like, "Yeah, sure." So I moved in with them, and we lived on the East Bay of San Francisco. And I was a bigger fish in a smaller sea of actors. And so...
Oh, so that was better for you than Hollywood.
Much better than Hollywood. Yeah. Yeah. So I got more opportunities to audition. I took more courses in film because I waited a year to become a California resident. And when you are a resident of California, school is very affordable. At least that's what it was back in 1989. And so I would just go from one college to the next, taking all the film and theater and drama that I could. And then I'd go to the next college and take all the film and theater drama that I could, you know. And every now and then I'd take another little class that was fun, like astronomy or photography or something like that. But basically after 4 years of going to school and waitressing, mind you, right. I thought...
You had to make some money somewhere.
I had to make money, yeah. I thought, wow, I guess I should have gone to college to get a degree instead of just absorbing all this information.
But that's why you wanted them. I mean, that's why you were there, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly. I don't have any regrets.
That is still your calling. I mean, you're still doing it.
I am.
It's been so many years.
Yeah. Now I'm in the Screen Actors Guild and AFTRA. You know, they've combined.
Yeah.
When I first came back to Boston as an adult, I just joined AFTRA because I was doing radio.
What's the difference between the two? One is the Screen Actors
Guild. SAG. Yeah, SAG is the Screen Actors Guild, and just generally it's like movies. And then the AFTRA is American Federation of Television and Radio Artists.
Oh.
And so I was doing a lot of radio spots at the time, back in the, mid to late 90s. And... you used to be able to make a lot of money doing that. I made a fortune once saying, this has been a message from the Massachusetts Department of Public Health or something like that.
Yeah.
It was a non-smoking campaign. And I just kept getting residuals from that. Even when I was living in France, they're writing me letters saying, like, can we run this again? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Quit asking me. Just send me the check.
Royalties, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they call them residuals in that world. Yep.
Okay.
And, yeah, so that was a lot of fun. And when I moved back from Europe, I thought, oh, I'll just do voiceovers again. And the whole world had changed because of technology. I mean, here we are sitting doing a podcast, and we're not in a studio paying $10,000 an hour, you know?
My office at home.
Yeah, exactly.
With equipment that I bought watching YouTube.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, back in the early mid-90s, you couldn't do that.
Exactly.
It would have cost you a fortune.
Exactly, right.
So everything changed.
The opportunities that you have today, if you want to try.
Yeah.
So we just went from Texas to California to Holland. Now you just mentioned France.
Yeah. I should also tell the listeners, I've had nothing but a giant cup of coffee today. So that might explain my all over the placeness.
So, what did you do in France? What brought you there?
Oh, my goodness. My husband at the time and I had been traveling there every summer. He was born in Morocco, so in Casablanca. So, at the time, the French government kind of ruled it. And his parents were French, so he has a French passport. And so, it was easy for us to go to France. That little history is helpful here. It's not like I went over there with an American. We're like, let's try this. I went over there with a Frenchman.
Yeah.
And so we were in France. Well, it started in Florida. Actually, let's back up even more.
Yeah.
It started in Boston when I was a stockbroker. Yeah. And I was working on State Street downtown. It was a Friday night. And my girlfriend said, let's go get a beer. And I said, I don't want to go out with you because all you do is hunt for men. It's not fun. And she said, okay, we're not going to hunt for guys tonight. Let's just go grab a beer after work. And I said, fine. So we walked across the street to Faneuil Hall. And the first guy I saw, I was like, oh, this is insane. Like, I must have him. It was crazy. And sure enough, 3 months later, I'm quitting my master's program for finance, quitting my job as a stockbroker at Bank Boston. I had a TV show at the time. I was writing children's stories. It was called Snuggle Up With Me. I quit that. And I moved on to a houseboat with him in Key West. And together...
3 months later.
3 months after I met this man. And together, he was an IT guy. I was in finance. And we said, what do we want to do? And he said, I love boats. And I said, I love being outside. So we created this business called Boating Buddies where we would... And I was like, we have to have a niche because that was my... Marketing was my background. Like, it can't be broad. We have to, have to focus in on something. So we decided sailing catamarans is what we would sell. So... Thanks to him being French, we ended up going to the French West Indies in the Caribbean and picking up all these vessels for close to nothing and then out of a charter program and then bringing them back to the States. making a fortune just off the exchange rate and off the boats, you know, the vessels themselves. It was a lot of fun. Did a lot of sailing. Wow. But then the economy here kind of fell. And we thought, and we were, so we were buying French vessels and selling them to the Americans. And then a lot of our potential buyers were saying, like, I just lost everything in the stock market. I just got forced, you know, to go into early retirement. Like, it was looking bad. And this was around 2000, 2002-ish. And so we said, okay, and we had been summering in France. Let's move to France, maybe buy American vessels, you know, like powerboats or something, and sell them to the French. You know, we wanted to just keep that connection. Kind of, exactly.
Yeah.
And so that's what brought us to France. And we ended up buying a big place. And when we started renovating it, we were like, oh my gosh, this is so easy. We weren't working with a hull. We were working with 90-degree angles instead. And we'd just laugh and say, this is a breeze. And we just fell in love with renovation and building. And so we kind of put the boating stuff on the back burner and just focused on construction and had a ball. And one day...
How old were you then?
I was in my 30s. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then one day we got a call from a trimaran company who said, you know, they had found us somewhere and said, would you represent us on the Riviera? And we said, oh, we'd have to sail on your vessel before we could decide that. And they said, well, we're having a regatta in Greece in 2 weeks. And we're like, oh, yeah, we'll be there.
Oh, my God.
So we were in France for 5 years and then ended up in Greece. Yeah. And that's how we got to Greece. We actually never sold that trimaran. We didn't like it. So I won't mention the name. But we fell in love with Greece. We went to Lefkada, which is a little island. Actually, it's a big island. And thought we could live here. But I wanted to be closer to the mainland. So we ended up on the southwest tip of the Peloponnese in a little town called Methone. And we were there for a couple years before the Greek government... The economy in Greece hit the skids.
Oh, yeah.
We lost everything in the bank and ended up moving back to the States penniless, moving in with my parents and eventually getting a divorce. That was fun. Seriously. I mean, I would do it all again. Like, everything was an experience. And
what about Key West? Why does that come in? Didn't you have a business in Key West?
That's
well,
where it started. Our boating business started in Key West.
Oh, it started in Key West.
Yep.
Okay, that's,
and
that's
that
right.
Key West, you know.
Right, right.
That's where we said, oh, what should we do? And so from Key West, we'd start going out to the French West Indies and buying vessels.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So I totally got out of finance. I let my Series 7 expire. He never looked back and did computer work, as far as I know. Now we're not chatting. He might be doing computer work now. But yeah, isn't that funny?
Because
you never, I just never knew where I was going to go. And my whole attitude was, I'm going to try this. And if it doesn't work, I can always go back.
Because you felt the safety of your parents always being
available.
So, you know, so you had a place to go.
Huge cushion. Yeah. That was such, I probably would have had a different experience if we couldn't go home and live with my parents for a while. That was heaven sent.
But did you make money? Like, because it seems like you were just going from country to country.
We made a lot of money.
You had a lot of money.
We lost
and then you
a
lost
lot
it
of
all
money.
In Greece.
Yes.
Oh, everything was there in the banks there.
Yeah, yeah. And then they were like, oh, I said, can I have, you know, I went to the bank. Literally, I went to the bank and I said, I need some money to pay my guys. It's payday. And they put their fingers under their chin and flicked it up and said, ohi, which means no. And I said, what do you mean no? Like, all our money's here. The thing that gave us security of going to Greece, because people are like, why would you go to Greece? You knew it was, you know, crazy. In a financial way. The Greek people are wonderful. So when we went to Greece and fell in love with Greece, we're like, how are we going to make this work? Like, we need some security here. And lo and behold, we did our investigating and found out that the Greek government at the time was offering a grant to stimulate their economy. And if you were European and you were going to bring your business to Greece, you could get money. So we filled out like a book of questions and we got a piece of paper that said, yes, you will be getting a grant if you bring your business here. Because the Peloponnese, had just burned down the summer before we moved there. And so they were trying to stimulate that economy. So that's another reason why we chose the Peloponnese. So we went there starting our business and we bought a bunch of land. We started designing homes that are 6,000 square feet with retractable roofs so you could see the stars at night.
Wow.
Oh my God, it was amazing. That was fun. And we bought a bunch of land that was going to be a hotel overlooking the Mediterranean. By the way, this piece of land in Greece is right where the Ionian Sea meets the Mediterranean. It's just gorgeous and it's hilly. It's amazing. Kind of looks like your little screensaver there. That just came on. It was amazing. And so when I went to the bank and they're like, hey, we loaned out all your money and they're not paying us back, you know, oops, sorry.
And there was no like government backed up like FDA?
No, nothing like that. No, their wow. backup was Germany at the time and they weren't going to give us any money. So we got an attorney. You know, we went to Athens and got an attorney and our fancy attorney said, you would win in court. Yeah, but you're never going to get the money from the bank.
They don't have it.
Exactly. You just won. Now you're going to have court fees. You're going to have attorney fees. He said, just get out of here. And we said, no. We're going to hang out. We're going to get grant money. You know, look at our piece of paper. And he almost fell out of his chair laughing at us because he said, everybody got that piece of paper. That paper is worth the paper it's on and nothing more. So we never got our grant, and that's when we like took our fancy boat and fancy cars and went back to France and sat there on our property and watched everything get repoed.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. And we were like, we probably shouldn't be here. Let's go home, you know. And my parents were like, you wouldn't live with us. And we really tried to make it work. We had one vessel left. It was a 74-foot Sparkman Stevens, which is beautiful craftsmanship vessel from 1956, I believe, out of Holland, or 1958. I can't remember. And it was a diamond in the rough. So it was still on the hard in Florida. So my husband at the time went down to Florida. I said, I'm staying here in Hull. I'm going to put Haven in school while we're here. And we had spent some time in Tunisia. So the idea was he was going to sail the vessel over to Tunisia to a yard we liked. And then when the dust settled, Haven and I, our son, would fly over to Tunisia and would raise him in Tunis, the town. And that would be that. Sorry, I just banged your microphone. And my husband got like to Bimini or something. And Haven came home from his first day at school. And I said, how was school? And he said, Mama, oh my gosh, Mama, I made friends. And my teacher sounds just like you. This was amazing. And I just thought, that shouldn't be amazing. It should be normal to have your teacher speaking English and be making friends on your first day.
Right.
So I had this epiphany that I'm not leaving. I'm not going to go to Tunisia. And I mean, I dragged him from America to France and from France to Greece. And the poor kid's like having to learn all these languages and a new alphabet and all this stuff. And I mean, it was good for his synapses, great for his brain.
Right.
I mean, I don't have any regrets, but at the time I said, I'm not going to keep doing this, you know, and he's going to have to learn Arabic. And so I said, we're going to stay here, you know, you do whatever you want to do with the boat. He ended up bringing it up to Gloucester instead. And then when we got divorced, his boys took the boat, because he had four boys before me, who were lovely, and two of them brought the boat down to our old stomping ground in Martinique. No, St. Martin. Yep, in St. Martin, right near Oyster Bay. And they turned it into a floating bar. I mean, it took it took them like a year to refit this vessel into a gorgeous floating bar. And then, I kid you not, they were open for like 3 months. A hurricane came and sank it.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. I was like, are you kidding me? So these poor kids, luckily they had insurance. Gosh. I guess the Coast Guard called them up, or they called the Coast Guard. And this is a cool story, because for a while there in Fort Lauderdale, there was a time where we lived on this boat. So, like, I know this boat, you know, like the back of my hand. And so the Coast Guard pulled it up, and they power washed all the paint off that they could, and they kind of got it down to bare bones. And they brought it out 2 nautical miles from St. Martin, and they sunk it. And now it's a reef. Really? Yeah, it's a reef. And I kid you not, I have seen videos of people snorkeling and with deep sea diving gear on. Like,
and you
swimming.
Lived in that boat.
I lived in it. They're swimming through my galley. They're swimming over my bed. They're swimming over my tub. And there are fish, like, you know, in my salon area. I'm like, what? It is the freakiest thing to see where you used to live being totally submerged underwater with sea life all over it. Like, imagine somebody, snorkeling right here, like, diving right. And right through your office.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's really bizarre. But it's cool that the boat ended up doing something good.
Again, yeah, and it's going to be there forever.
Forever, much, right? Yeah, and helping the ecology there.
Wow.
Isn't that neat?
Did you guys get anything for it?
I have no idea. The boys hopefully did.
By that point,
I was divorced.
You were divorced, yeah. Oh
yeah. My gosh. Isn't that neat? That's a neat story.
You have to go and visit it sometime, right?
I would love to.
Heaven too, right?
Yeah.
Because he lived on it too when it was little.
He didn't. He didn't.
He wasn't born yet.
Yep, he wasn't born yet. Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's a real cool story.
Yeah. Yep. Lots of good stories. I always think something bad, even at the time it feels bad, can always turn into something good.
Especially when you look back.
Hunt the goodness. Exactly.
Yeah. All the things that you learn. Obviously, you have no fear.
Oh, I have fear. I confront it a lot, but I definitely have fear. Yeah.
That's like, you know, even especially at that age, to just, you know, embark in all these adventures.
You know what?
And financial adventures. Yeah. You know, as well as.
I think at the time I was in love, and I didn't mind following.
Yeah.
You know, I think now I kind of scare men because I think I come across as a leader.
Yeah.
Because
you are.
Well, isn't that funny? I would love to find a guy who's going to be my equal.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think I want to blindly follow like I used to. And I have no desire to lead. I lead at work. I lead my life. You know, I've been a single mom for a long time. And I'm not complaining, but it would be nice to find an equal.
In a relationship.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. This is a dating podcast, right? You're supposed to hook me up with a nice guy. That's why I came.
Maybe somebody will call.
Oh, buddy.
I can lead you.
How funny.
Be your equal. It's funny. So when did you get the bug for acting? Well, you did that when you were real young.
Oh,
but then
yeah.
You put that on hold when you met your ex-husband, right?
I did. And that was a shame. Yeah. Although it's funny because as an actress, it's funny you say, oh, you have no fear. I think being an actress and a very well-trained actress has allowed me to hide my fear because I can act like I don't have fear.
Right.
Like there's a Saturday Night Live skit where they do something funny and they're like, I was acting. But really, I want to start I'd love to start a business called Acting for Business, where I teach business people how to act. Yeah. Like a friend of mine.
Like I say, fake until you make it.
Almost like that. Yeah. But as an actress or actor or whatever, you know, when you're acting, the best way to act is to find something realistic. Even if you're playing like a hideous witch and you're the most evil person in the world, find something that resonates with you and that hideous evil person. That's the truth. Because when you're speaking the truth, you have more credibility.
Right.
You know, so maybe this hideous witch really loves her child. And you can harness that when you're playing the hideous witch, you know. And that's why she's so mean. She's protecting the one she loves, you know, and stuff like that. So
once you make that connection, then you can be more yourself. Just like when you're doing a presentation in front of a lot of people. They say, talk about something that you know inside and out.
Yes.
Because then you won't get stuck. Because
it's
there. But if you want to talk about something that you learned or that you...
Yeah, you're not confident about it. Yeah.
You practice, then the fear comes in, and then you just go blank, right?
Mm-hmm. That's part of it.
Same kind of idea. That's great. You should. So is that on your list of things to do?
It is on my list of things to do,
Good.
And there's also lots of physical technique, like with acting, you know, like one of my very advanced acting classes, you'd learn your lines, and then my professor would say, okay, now I want you to walk with your nose out and say your lines. Well, isn't this ridiculous? But it changed the way the character said the lines. And then, I want you to walk with your pelvis out. You know, those pelvis first people.
Yeah.
And say your lines. And that changed the way you'd say your lines.
Right.
Because you're turning into someone totally different when you're nose first or when you're pelvis first. And same with business. You know, like there's that, what is it called? The Wonder Woman stance. Like if you're feeling unsure of yourself, but you want people to think you're sure of yourself, or you need a boost of confidence, physically put yourself in that Wonder Woman stance and you're going to get that. Somehow, scientifically, they've learned that increases your dopamine levels. You know, it's like, cool. Little things like that.
Right.
I think could be taught business for acting. My new thing. Actually, I do have a new business because I was.
I was just going to say, you just said a business 2 months ago.
I know. I got laid off from my job, which is okay. It forces me to open doors.
Yeah.
I was working for a primary care practice, and that was great.
As well as being a realtor, as well as being an actress.
I know. But now I'm working with my sister. She's wicked cool. We are almost 18 years apart, but just like in personality, we're days apart. It's funny. And same parents, might I add. I was like the only high school senior.
Your parents are cool. I met them.
Yeah, you did.
So educated. They'd be like, oh my God.
Yeah, they're not like me.
PhD.
Yeah, I quit. How funny. Yeah, they're cool. And my sister has a degree in psychology.
Okay.
And she went to school for interior design. So she put together a business where she actually designs people's, you know, insides of their homes and does it based on how do you want to feel in this room? How do you want to feel in that room? And she'll use psychology, you know, it's almost like feng shui, and they're, you know, the Dutch do it. They have a name I cannot pronounce, but it's making you feel good in the room.
In the room.
Or feel energetic or feel relaxed, depending on what you want to feel in that room. She can design it to give you that feeling, which is cool.
How long have you been doing that?
Oh, for years, like at least 10 years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so, you know, she just put, and she's almost finished, a huge addition on her home. When I say huge, I mean ginormous, like with a pool and an elevator, because she has a child with some special needs and that elevator is going to come in handy. So it's a giant job. I renovated my house when I bought it, and plus I'd been in construction for years in Europe. So together we thought, you know what? Let's do something together. We work well together. And so we put together a company called Renovation Resource. We want to be your renovation resource because we know, well, actually she knows a lot of Brazilians who are chomping at the bit to work in construction. Their language is the barrier, not their skills, you know. And so we've spoken to them and they're on board. And I mean, right now you can't find it. I mean, we're coming from like South Shore, Massachusetts here. For all you listeners all over the world, you know, it might not be the same where you are, but here it's hard to find good construction workers that are ready and available.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So we are available right now and it's taking off. So it's very exciting.
Wow. And you say you already have 3 jobs, right? You haven't even advertised yet. You never have your website.
Yeah. It's word of mouth. Word of mouth. Yeah. And my focus, if it were up to me, just because the last 15 years have been in healthcare, specifically in the senior industry, and being a real estate agent for the last 15 years, I know the value of homes.
Right.
And so many times seniors who are having to move into assisted living communities or, you know, even worse, going from home just to a skilled nursing facility or, God forbid, the hospital and need to sell their home, they just quickly sell it as is. And so the construction guy out there is like, this is great. I want to flip it.
Right.
All right, that's not bad for the flipper, but what I'd like to do is have the opportunity to walk into that senior's home and say, hey, look, instead of having somebody come in and buy it as is and then they're flipping it, you know, making a quick $100,000, if you got that $100,000 or even $50,000 more, that could give you another year someplace, you know?
Right.
And because people...
And you take... the responsibility away from it, because that's what holds people back.
They're like, afraid.
I can't. Right. I'm afraid. Yep. I can't. Especially if they're older.
Yeah.
I know. I hiring all the people. You know, managing all the work and all the financial aspects of the whole thing.
Absolutely. So we do everything A to Z. Manage it.
You just manage the whole thing.
Yeah.
And then just make the money. So they, just like you said, they're flipping their own house.
Exactly. Exactly. And of course, when it comes time to staging, we know who to call. This is where you plug it.
Listen, it's amazing, like, to have the knowledge.
Yeah.
Just because somebody flips a house,
right,
doesn't mean that they know what they're doing.
That's true. That is so true.
And I can, you know, testify to that, because I've seen some really bad, and they know once they've done it, they realize that they just didn't know what they were doing. I just looked at a house yesterday. And the guy's like, you know, struggling because he can't sell it.
Mm.
And, you know, and I went to look at it and I say, well, I know why. You know why. We both know why.
How funny.
But a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
You know? And they like, live and learn. But it's at the expense of mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, and thank God that, you know, the staging does help.
It does.
Yeah.
It makes a world of difference. Because it does distract
people from all... you know, things that went wrong.
You're gonna see the crack around the window if there's no furniture in the room.
It's more than that. It's just like the way that they design things. They're just awful.
Yeah.
Awful.
Absolutely.
A lot of times they just, because they're flipping, they want to save money.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't hire an architect.
Right.
Mistake number one. Right. Mm-hmm. So they think that, oh, I know how to build, so I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And that's when they lose a lot of money.
Yeah.
Because they're just not. We all should be it's good to be staying in your lane.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we're not good at everything. You know, we can try everything, but, you know, if you want to make money, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But so what you're doing, that's great. That's like very different.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I know a lot of even like stages that take on project management, you know, because of interior design, you know, doing new kitchens, you're doing... But you're just like, you're taking the whole house.
Well, one of our projects is an entire home. This woman who lives down in Miami inherited her father's home. And her father had torn down the walls. So there needs to be insulation, new walls, and flooring and everything. Basically, it's framed. You know?
Yeah.
And so she's like, thanks, Dad. And she's like, I live in Miami. I can't do this. You know, the house is on the South Shore. And we're like, we can help. You know, we'll manage it. Like, we'll go to the town hall and get the permits.
Right.
You know, we can bring
like in a general manager.
Exactly. But without the GC cost. Yes,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And we're hiring licensed subcontractors, you know, and we're getting quotes from them. So, you know, we can bring you a couple quotes, you know, from our slew of Brazilians. They're all, you know, licensed and skilled framers, electricians, plumbers, carpenters. Yeah.
That's excellent.
It's really, really fun. Yes.
You're excited.
I am excited. Yeah. I look and say, I'm 53 years old. I've promised my son I'll live to be 100. Well, you know why? Because for 2 years, I was living under the pretense of, I'm happily married, and then found out it wasn't. It was really bizarre, and that's a whole other story, and quickly got divorced from that thing. And so I said to my son, okay, how are we going to look at this and like just be able to clear our heads of it? I said, I tell you what, I will do my best to live to be 100. So on my deathbed, I'll look back and go, oh, that was just 2% of my life. Piff. Pish posh. Who cares about 2%? Seriously, if something is 98 cents and you're like, oh, you get 2 cents back, what do? You just leave it on the counter, right?
Right.
I'm leaving those 2 years on the counter. Don't want them. You know? And we're like, cool with that. So I have to live to be 100. Anything over that is like extra. Woohoo! Yeah. Because my whole thing is like, happiness, being an optimist, choosing happiness. That's actually one of my favorite presentations. I love giving presentations about choosing happiness because it's subjective. Your happiness is different from mine, you know, but we all have that choice. I can't control you and make you happy.
Right.
That's just your choice.
Right. And that's where people make the mistake.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they think, oh, if I marry this person, he's going to make me happy. And then the disappointment.
Right.
Nobody can make you happy by yourself. Right. You have to be happy with yourself in order to be happy.
Yeah.
Nobody can give you happiness.
That's true. However, there's so
comfort
many.
And, you know.
Yeah. And there's so many studies out now about the importance of socialization.
Yeah.
We need to be social. We can't just be happy in our own, you know, den. That doesn't make sense. That goes against our, you know, eons of nature. We're social creatures. We need each other. But we should find our own happiness.
Right.
Yeah. It was funny. I listen to these happiness podcasts, you know, when I'm driving around and stuff. And the last one I listened to on my way here, some guy lives in New York and he said, I just love to sing. And so he's like, I'll have asked the Uber driver to come to my house and sing with me. He goes, I'll ask anybody to come to my house and sing with me. He holds these singing things and he believes that singing is good for your health. And so, of course, during the podcast, all these scientists come on and they're like, yes, singing is great for your health. You know, it boosts your serotonin levels and dopamine and oxytocin and all this stuff. And they're able now to detect oxytocin levels just from doing a saliva, like a swab through your mouth from saliva. So it's not just people subjectively saying, I'm happier. It's science now.
Science-based.
It's evidence-based. It's amazing. And so, we need people, and I like to focus on happiness. However, there are so many schools for happiness these days. Because I'm looking at, I think, you know, when you look up stuff, then it just comes, you know, and like a fire hose at you. So I keep getting all this Randy, come join our happiness school. I'm like, hold on. What I ended up taking when I got laid off, I was like, time to reinvent myself, right?
Yeah.
So I've been in healthcare for 15 years, always on the marketing side, never providing the care.
Right.
But I feel like all my friends come to me when they are down, you know, when they need a little lift, when they need a boost. And so I thought, I love doing this, you know, how can I help them more? And so, and how can I monetize this also,
right,
you know,
because
I need some money.
Exactly.
I can't deny that. It's just the society we live in. So I've taken an 8-week intense course called Wellness and Nutrition, and it's by the Harvard School of Medicine's executive programs. And if anybody, you know, wants a link, just Google that. It's an amazing school. Everybody gets in if you pay. But at the end of this 8 weeks, I'm going to be certified to have my own clients and help people.
To be a coach?
Yeah, to improve their life. And there are these 6 pillars of wellness and all this nutrition stuff I'm learning. And it's like, oh, cool. It's not, I want to say it's common sense. But some of this stuff, I was like, oh, I knew to eat well. Right. But I didn't understand the science really of why. Oh, I know you're supposed to sleep well, you know, but I didn't understand the science of why. So it's just kind of cool. And I'm loving it. Absolutely loving it.
That's
a new thing.
2 new things in the last 2 months since you got laid off.
Santina, I kid you not. And the name of this company that I'm going to start is going to be called Joyful Journeys because...
Joyful Journeys. I love that.
Thank you. Because it's a journey. It's not
it is a journey.
It's not like one day I'm going to fix you. You can't be fixed in a day. And, you know, I don't like to think of it as being broken or being fixed either, but it's a journey. And... it's your choice to create joy, make it a joyful journey.
First, you have to make the decision that you want to be joyful, right?
Oh,
that's
my
number
goodness.
One,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So you conscientiously have to say,
yeah.
Even if you say it and they're just words.
Yeah.
Just like you were saying, there is a reaction pattern.
Yeah.
But we all become kind of lazy, I think, mentally, number one.
And
get
physically.
Influenced by other. And physically by other people, every little thing that happens, turn it into a real big thing.
Yes, drama.
Even 2 years of a bad divorce, you're making it sound like, well, it's only 2% of my life.
Exactly.
So, doesn't even
it's
count.
Nothing.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Leaving that on the counter. You don't want it.
Right. And we take every little tiny minor thing that happens every day, and everything's just like, oh my God, you wouldn't believe what happened to me.
I know, right? Or ever have a conversation with somebody in traffic? Forget about it. Like, dude, call me when you've parked.
Wow. That's great. That's great. I love that.
Yeah. I'm loving it too. I can't wait. I can't wait to start that. It's so exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that goes with, you know, that goes along with acting for business. You know,
right.
Well, you want to feel good. The better your vessel is, your body,
right,
the better you are as an actor, you know.
Exactly, exactly. And you have to take care of yourself physically and mentally.
Yeah.
Because the both, and people don't really realize that taking care of yourself physically,
yep,
much really affects your head.
Absolutely,
right?
Yes. Yeah. And vice versa.
And vice versa, yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting, like, if you have a bad dream, when you wake up from that bad dream, you're probably breathing heavy. You're probably sweating. You're probably nervous. You can hear your heartbeat. Oh my, those are physical reactions to something that's only in your head.
Right.
Only in your head. It's a dream.
And everything really is in your head.
Yeah.
Even bad things. Like,
yeah.
You can change your mind if you want to.
Thank you. Yes. So my number one takeaway always is something that my father used to say to me. He has a PhD in psychology. And I'd be like, Dad, oh my God, this is horrible. Wah, wah, wah. And he's like, Randy, what do I tell you? And he used to say, make your motions control your emotions.
Right.
If you can't control your emotions, make your motions control your emotions. So think about what you do when you're happy. Physically, I like to dance. Yeah. I'm physical. I sit up straight. I even smile, right? Try when you feel a funk coming on, and it's normal to get blue. You know,
right.
We do. We're human. We have roller coasters of emotions, but the more we can control them, the better off we are. So if you feel yourself getting down, get down. Just kidding. Like dancing. But do the physical thing that you do when you are happy. And you're going to feel like an idiot at first. Like when I'm angry and I'm trying to dance, I'm just stomping around. And I look like an idiot. But you know what? Pretty soon I'm dancing. I'm feeling fantastic. I still have that problem, but now I've put myself in a different mindset to work out that problem. It's not a problem anymore. It's a challenge. And I'm up for it because I've just been dancing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And it sounds so silly and so easy, but it actually works.
Actually, it's not easy.
Yeah, it sounds easy. It's not.
It sounds it, but it's not.
You're right.
It takes a lot of training and having a coach.
Yeah.
That's why life coaches are so popular now, right?
Yeah.
Because they really help people put the thoughts into actions.
Yeah.
And start to change because whatever you think is what you become, right?
That's I'm not a movie star, so I don't know where that went. Not always. Not
bad,
always.
When it's bad things, you know, this is how fears come on, right?
Yeah.
You think of something and then, you know, you keep on thinking about it. And it's something that doesn't even exist.
Yeah.
Or a fear of something that's going to happen. And it never happens.
Mm.
And people spend years of their lives, right?
Yeah.
Thinking about a fear of something that's never going to happen.
Yeah.
And
fears
you
are sad.
You know it.
Yeah.
But, you know, you just can't help it because your mind goes there. And you need a way to get your mind away from it.
Yeah. Some fears are healthy. But then if they're not healthy, they're a phobia.
The phobia, you know?
Yeah. That's something to deal with.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Wow. Okay, so where's the acting coming in now with all this new business, two businesses since November?
Well, right now I'm acting like I know what I'm talking about, and just kidding. Yeah, I'm in the Screen Actors Guild.
Right.
We were on strike for a long time, and now the strike's over. And I've been kvetching to my friends that in Boston, the only union work we can get is background work because they're casting all the real talent, you know, the big talent from New York and LA. And even though they're shooting in Massachusetts and Massachusetts' film office is bragging, like, we are shooting so many films in Massachusetts.
Right.
Yeah, that's great for our economy and everything. I mean, I'm also the executive director of the Hull Film Office, so I welcome films to be shot in Hull. But I also welcome local talent to be used. I welcome, you know, local gaffers to be used and local everything to be used when we're in Hull. Hull is filled with so many talented people. Yet again, all those positions are being filled you know, outside of Massachusetts and flown in. So it's like, okay, the hotels and maybe the restaurant industries are booming a little bit. Yeah. Maybe the police is booming a little bit because everybody needs a police detail. Right. You know, like I was trying to get here today and I was going down Wollaston Boulevard and there's a big film set there shooting something.
Today,
and
today?
Yep. Lots of police officers. We're all having to go around this film set and I get so excited like a little kid at Christmas, you know, when I see a film set. I wanted to pull over and be like, can I be in your movie? Little too late, you know. But yeah, it's so exciting and I would love an opportunity. When I wasn't in the union, when I moved back from Europe, I decided to stay out of the union for a while because all the big jobs were non-union. So you could star in an independent film, you could star in a short and all the stuff. And I wasn't getting paid, but I was getting a lot of work. You know, it was so much fun.
Okay.
But then I thought, again, I need to monetize this. And so I started paying my dues again and I got back into the union and I've only been offered background work. But I have to be positive because a friend of mine, I was, you know, like I said, complaining about it the other day. And she's like, hang in there. You know, there will be spots for you. So anybody out there that's a casting agent, please keep me. I'm just kidding. But I miss it and I love it. So every day I say, at least I got to act today. Like right, I said, I'm acting all the time, even if I'm not in front of a camera. I'm acting because we all do.
Yeah, and, we do, yeah.
Yeah, and it's okay. You know, sometimes if I'm not feeling well, I act like I am, and I swear I will my illness away. I just will it away.
Right.
The power of the mind is incredible.
It is, and we basically don't really use it. Like maybe that 2% that you're talking about.
Yeah, I know.
And the rest of it, we just kind of like ignore it. You know?
Yeah. We have powerful tools we were born with that we just need to harness.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a podcast because I like to listen to podcasts as well too, especially when I'm at the gym.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Good for you.
It's a little bit hard sometimes because the music, it's all so loud. So I have like between me counting and listening to the podcast and the music, but it all works out, you know? Because the things that I like, I usually listen to more than once. You know, when mm-hmm. you hear a good message, something that you want to use.
Right.
You kind of forget, you know.
Yeah, that's normal.
But one of the things that I heard, I think it was Dr. Chipaka, he said that people, on average, mm-hmm. we have about 60,000 thoughts in a mind. Things that we think about. The bad thing is that 95% of them are the same thing that you thought about yesterday and the day before.
Oh, how funny.
Yeah, because we don't expand our mind. We don't expand. We don't try to learn new things. So we always think about, oh, you know, same thing, right? Yeah. What am I going for breakfast? Who am I going to call? You know, same 95%.
Oh, that's
interesting. So that 5% is just things that people come into your life and they ask you for something and you have to think about something different.
Oh.
It puts it into perspective though, right?
Yeah.
So every day I'm thinking the same things over and over and over again.
Huh. And I wonder if there's like a little app, you know, everything's on an app now that could give you something new to think about today, number one. Something new to think about today, number two. You know?
Little prompts.
Yeah, exactly.
Like an alarm.
Yeah. Oh, I never thought about going to the bathroom on the moon. You know?
Funny. I know. Everything is kind of, you have to be aware.
Right.
Basically, it's awareness. Right?
Yeah.
Who would have thought?
Right.
We think that, you know, every day we think new things. And that's why they also even say with Alzheimer's too, mm-hmm. right? The best medicine is to learn new things. Like you're talking about dancing, right?
Yeah, dancing has to be so good for that.
Especially if you learn to do things with your hands.
Yep.
You know, or with your feet. You know, so you're moving your body and you're thinking.
Yeah, at the same time. Movement and thought at the same time.
At the same time.
Yeah, that's huge.
And not just like doing puzzles. Mm-hmm. People think that that's like, keeps your mind sharp. And actually they say that it doesn't because you are so trained already to figure those things out that you're not really,
Wow.
And plus it's just your mind. You're not doing anything with your hands.
Okay.
You know, So to learn how to make something, even right. hobbies or things like that, it makes your mind get healthier.
Well, I know what I'm going to do next. I watched a TikTok, and this girl had, you know, when you were little and you'd make like little, like trivets, and it was like a pot holder with yarn, and you'd go back and forth.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, there was like, and it's a square, and there was a giant one, like 10 feet by 8 feet, and she had yarn, and she was going all up and down with this yarn back and forth and zigzagging. And the end result was this beautiful blanket out of yarn. And then she snipped all over the top of layer of the yarn, and boom, she made pom-poms. So one side of the blanket was yarn pom-poms, and the other side of the blanket was just like a sweater.
Wow.
And someone, you know, commented, how long did this take? 15 hours. But she was using her whole entire body, her hands, her mind. Yeah. And then came out with this beautiful craft, this blanket that she could have forever. And that's what we need to do. We need to make one
Either
of those.
Yeah. Oh, what's the marry the dancing place?
Oh, yeah. Or we could join a dancing school. Yeah.
Or even Zumba.
I used to be a Zumba instructor. Isn't that funny? Yeah.
There you go.
That was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
What is it that you haven't done? What's a there's a lot things I haven't that done. You want to do?
Oh, my goodness.
Eventually.
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. It would make me so happy to have a farm with miniature horses and miniature goats.
A farm. Okay.
Yeah. I want them now, but I don't have enough land.
Yeah.
But if I had more land, a miniature farm. And I would have people who, you know, like Make-A-Wish people come in. I would gather them and bring them to senior residents. I would use them for therapy.
Wow.
Oh my God, it would bring so much happiness.
It would.
And I would take the goats, because when we lived in Greece, like nobody had a lawnmower. The guy would just bring his sheep and goats, and they would cross your land, invited or not, they'd cross your land, and then eat all the grass, and then they'd poop everywhere. But that was natural fertilizer, yeah. And it was amazing. And then
which is what they do now. They've done it even in Boston.
Yeah.
And the Commons, right?
They did that
last year and the year before. Yeah.
Yep. So, yeah. And it brought so much joy.
Yeah.
See?
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's a dream.
That could be part of my joyful journey. Oh, and I love alliteration. So my business has to have an alliteration. like renovation resource, 2 R's. Joyful Journey, 2 J's. My boat business when I first met my husband was Boating Buddies. Because I just think it's more fun.
Yeah.
It's easier to remember.
Yeah.
I wish my name was Randy Raraguas, but that's a little silly sounding. Or Vandy. Vandy Raraguas.
Change it from the V to an R.
Yeah, exactly. Not funny.
Okay, well, this has been very, very interesting. I'm sure that we could probably talk for another hour. You tell me about
I should plug my
more things that you've done in your life.
I think somebody who's way more interesting than me is my son, Haven. So if you want to hear some incredible music, check out Haven West Viraguas.
Yeah, he just graduated from Berkeley.
Yeah, he did, and he's only 20. So he's young, he's smart, he's wicked smart.
Well, that's
smart.
Because of all the languages that he had to learn when he was a kid.
Yeah.
Does he remember any of those languages?
Yeah, he does.
That's the good thing, because when you learn that young, you retain.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So he obviously graduated early, so he's super smart.
Yeah, he was a valedictorian at Hull High, and then he went on to Berkeley and graduated Berkeley College of Music in 3 years.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. With honors.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So proud of him.
Yeah.
He's a good looking kid.
Yeah.
Yes.
Take after his mouth. I'm just
we need to get your daughter and my son together so we can be sisters.
So Isabella's 21 and he's what, 20?
He's 20. He'll be 21 on December 22nd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. We'll say something.
Yeah.
Okay.
This was great. So,
yeah, this was really great.
And I should say, for all of you who can't see Santina, she looks fantastic, and she has arms that are like a rock. Now, it works. She's definitely been going to the gym.
I'm trying.
Yeah.
And it helps that it's like right down the street. So
you're
I have
aging,
no excuse.
You're aging backwards.
You know, like I just put my workout clothes every day and some point, whether it's in the morning or in the afternoon.
That's awesome.
I try, you know, and I always convince myself, well, you know, even if I don't have, you can only go in for 10 minutes.
Nice.
But then once I'm there, then I feel guilty.
Leaving. So yeah. You trick yourself.
I trick myself.
Yeah.
And I know that I do it. I allow myself to do it all the time.
That's wonderful because you know what works for you.
Yeah. Because otherwise it's like, I'm hungry, I'm this, or, yeah. You know, I'm going to go home.
Right.
But just do it for 10 minutes. You can do that.
That's awesome.
You can do that.
Yeah.
Then you can do another machine. But
that's perfect.
Yeah.
That's your takeaway today.
That's my takeaway. Yeah.
That's what I'm going to do.
I kind of use it with a lot of things, you know, like just kind of like when I started the podcast, I was like, well, you know, I don't care. You know, people going to think, whatever. I'm like, so that's why I did it with my daughter. I'm like,
cool.
If it doesn't come out good, nobody's going to know.
Right.
It'll be my little secret.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so you just kind of like little steps.
Yes.
Just to make yourself like go further without making it so overwhelming that you won't do it.
That is.
So like one step at a time. That's how I always say to Bella. Put one foot in front of the other.
Right.
Don't think where you're going to be going. Like as long as you just put one foot in front of the other, you will get there.
Yeah, that's right.
Little steps really help.
The longest journey started with one step.
Exactly, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So works for me, I guess. It works for a lot of people, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, but we all find our own little ways to get there,
right.
Wherever we're going. And the journey should be the best part of the whole thing and know
where
you're going, right?
Yes.
When you get there, it's kind of disappointing sometimes. Gee, yeah. I thought this was going to be much better than that.
I
thought it was going to last a long time.
That's why all these people that win the lottery, they end up being miserable.
Yeah.
All the movie stars complain. They got the paparazzi. Oh, lucky me, I don't have the paparazzi. Lucky me, I don't have billions to worry about, you know.
I know. And
we're so fortunate.
I know, they can't make it because they it's too much for them to handle all that pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Being normal is wonderful.
Yeah, if you can. Whatever normal is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's subjective, definitely.
Very subjective. Okay, Randy, well, thank you so much. This was very enlightening.
Oh, so much fun. Thank you.